My guest at this time is radio talk legend Barry Farber. He's been in the business for more than 50 years, and he's the author of the brand new book, Cocktails with Molotov, An Odyssey of Unlikely Detours. And Barry, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Greg. It's my delight.
Well, it's obvious from your life in radio and your life even before that, that you've got an amazing collection of anecdotes here. What convinced you to finally put them into book form?
Well, this, you know, this is interesting. I decided, and I think this is maybe the best idea I ever had. I don't have many good ones, but I decided it might be good not to write a book about my life, too much dull stuff, but I would simply write chapters that were A, true, and B, unbelievable. So that's pretty much what you got here. I mean, going to a football game from North Carolina to Maryland and winding up for 6 weeks in communist Yugoslavia. That happened to me. True and kind of unbelievable. Talk about the title of the book, Cocktails with Molotov. There was a Vyacheslav Molotov, Soviet foreign minister. And, yes, I had cocktails with Molotov. Now, having told you that to generate excitement, once I tell you the second line, it's like a magician showing you how the magic trick works. It loses a lot of its excitement. In 1956, I was one of the first tourists. That was the first year tourists were allowed into the Soviet Union. There were so few Americans that the American embassy invited all of us to the July the 4th party at the home of the American ambassador, Chip Bolin. And the Soviet leadership came, and Molotov was there. And I had a conversation, cocktails with Molotov. So you see, there's no magic, but it's exciting, and they're true, and at least on the surface, unbelievable.
And one of my favorite parts of the story is that you were deliberately trying to dodge Premier Khrushchev at the event and kind of really bumped into Molotov, completely unexpected to see him.
Well, Greg, you have read the book. You get oak leaf clusters for that. yeah, I remember even at that junior age, all the newsmen were clustering around Khrushchev, and I thought it was kind of tacky. But in later years, when I would hear them say, when I met with Khrushchev in Moscow in July 1956, I felt kind of sorry that I hadn't horned in and met him myself.
Well, you talk about a lot of different things in this book, and a lot of the stories have the premise of the time you spent either in the USSR or especially around Hungary during the time of the turmoil there in 1956.
Right.
How much did that impact your worldview?
Well, totally. Totally. As a matter of fact, in my whole radio life, the big rap on me was always, quote, Farber could never get over the Hungarian Revolution, close quote. Well, let me tell you something. That's true. But the Soviet Union never got over the Hungarian Revolution either. And we owe the Hungarian freedom fighters a non-communist Europe today. It affected me totally. Good question.
And, of course, some of the humor involved in this book is also extremely interesting. Your career in radio was almost a very short one, if not for some quick thinking on your part in a conversation with Bob Hope, correct?
Yeah, I had what it took to get the job, but I didn't have what it took to keep the job. Does that sound familiar in American
sure.
life? So anyhow, my job was getting celebrity guests for the show. I'm from North Carolina. To me, a public figure at that time was anybody who'd done jury duty. My heroes were the Hungarian freedom fighters. They were the celebrities. So I was told I just wasn't cutting it, and to get ready for an envelope with a short note from my boss. Well, I saw that Bob Hope was in town at the Waldorf Astoria. We did our show. It wasn't my show. I was the producer. I was supposed to get the big shot guest. So I called the Waldorf and asked for Bob Hope's room, and he answered the phone. I could tell by his voice. I said, Mr. Hope, my name is Barry Farber. I produce the Tex and Jinx radio show. Would you come downstairs? We do it right from the lobby of the Waldorf. Would you do our show tonight? He said, what do you pay? And he knew he was teasing, knew that local radio didn't pay guests. I said, Mr. Hope, we don't pay guests, but we would really love to have you. He said, you can't treat me like that. I'm a big star. He wasn't angry. He was toying with me. He said, you give me one reason why I should come down and do that radio show tonight. And I don't know what inspired me, but I said exactly the right thing. I've never knocked out a heavyweight champion, but I gave Bob Hope one of the biggest laughs of his life. When he said, give me one reason why I should come down and do your show, I said, it's my birthday. And he said, what? And I could hear him talking to his entourage in his suite upstairs. He said, this kid says I should do his radio show tonight because it's his birthday. He not only came, but he brought Anita Ekberg, who was the number one sex goddess of Hollywood at the time. So from that point forward, nobody accused me of not being able to bring in celebrity guests anymore.
Great story, and there's another great story that I'll let folks discover for themselves in the book and in another time when you met Alfred Hitchcock. Just a great story with a lot of great comedy there. In our last couple of minutes here, Barry, you are considered certainly one of the pioneers in talk radio. And at the time that you started, the talk shows had a lot more variety. Now, of course, they take on mostly a political tenor. Talk about the evolution and what you see as your role in that evolution.
Well, I could puff my chest out and say, I was there at the founding, and we saw that talk radio was not flexing its muscle. No politicians were afraid of any of us. And I said, it would be a total flat-out lie. I really admire what the generation after me did. When I entered talk radio, Greg, the toughest question you ever heard asked was, tell me about your next movie, baby. Nobody warned us to stay away from politics and you know, don't make sure. Nobody warned us. It just wasn't part of our culture. We were like little poodles. We didn't shake anything. We had air power, and we just didn't use it. So from the little poodles of when I started, here they are, the fire-breathing mastodons of today. Talk radio is a major air force that can save America and change the world, and I'm sorry I didn't pick up on that. I got to congratulate Rush Limbaugh for beating me to it.
Well, I think Rush, who has a very nice words on the cover of your book and many others, do see you as their inspiration and as a real pioneer in the industry. So don't sell yourself short too much. A lot of us in the industry certainly look up to you. As you look back at your career and your experiences and just in putting this book together, what strikes you most about what's most unbelievable or most interesting about all your years in the industry and beyond?
Well, I guess the most unbelievable thing I did, and this, you know, I cannot hate people who were in the Hitler Youth. The grown-ups were approving of it. The older boys were doing it. It seemed natural and organic to them at the time. They didn't realize all the evil involved. When Fidel Castro came to New York in 1959, I was not on the air, but I was working for a radio station in New York. And the news director said, hey, Farber, you speak Spanish. Fidel's going to be speaking in Spanish at the mall in Central Park. Come and translate a little bit. So I did, and there were five of us from the station there. And he was going to go to Manhattan Center for another speech later. And the news director said, Farber, don't you live near here? I said, yeah, it was a hot summer night. He said, let's go over to your place, get a few beers, and then we'll wait until it's time to go to Manhattan Center. Well, the night was so hot and the beers were so cool, the news director looked at his watch and said, Farber, do you have any more on that tape that you translated that we didn't feed to the station after the first Castro speech? I said, sure, we got 10 minutes we hadn't used. He said, why don't we just feed it from here and say we're at Manhattan Center? You know, that never, to me, right, looking back to hear myself say that, it deserves 30 days in the electric chair. But I said, hey, man, that's a hoot. So the news director got on and said, here we are at Manhattan Center, and here's Fidel Castro speaking, and our interpreter, Barry Farber. What is he saying, Barry? And then you heard me translating simultaneously. And then we had a few more beers, and the dusk turned into dark, and everybody went home. The next morning, Greg, we learned that Fidel Castro never got to Manhattan Center. There was a bomb threat. But the punchline, the O. Henry ending, is we never heard a word about what we had done. We never heard pea turkey about it from our bosses, from our colleagues, from the FCC, from other states. And this was a 50,000-watt station in New York City. And not one person called us out for saying we were with Fidel Castro at Manhattan Center when Fidel Castro never made it to Manhattan Center. Now, that to me is the most remarkable thing that happened to me radio.
A few lucky breaks along the way, never heard either. A great story. Barry, congratulations on an amazing career. That continues, of course. And the book, Cocktails with Molotov, thank you very much for your time today.
Greg, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, same here, sir. Barry Farber, legend in talk radio. The book is Cocktails with Molotov, an odyssey of unlikely detours. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.